Welcome to After Hours, Conversations for Music Educators, presented by AMRO Music. This is where we share ideas and work towards solutions to better serve your students. This week, Nick Averwater talks with Dr. Mike Yopp, Director of Bands at Middleton High School in Middleton, Tennessee. Middleton is a town of just a few hundred people in the southwestern part of the state, but the high school serves several surrounding communities as part of the Hardeman County School District. In March of 2023, a few weeks after this conversation, it was announced that Dr. Yopp will be taking on a new role as a professor and director of the jazz band at Freed Hardeman University in Henderson, Tennessee. In this episode, he'll tell us about the people and experiences that inspired him to become a music educator, but the majority of the conversation will focus on his strategies and philosophies about recruitment, something he has been very successful at doing at both the high school and college level. Our conversation was recorded January 26, 2023. We've broken it up into two episodes, and this is part one.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to After Hours Conversations for Music Educators. I'm excited today to sit down with Dr. Mike Yopp. Now, if you don't know Dr. Yopp, he is the director of bands at Middleton High School in Middle Tennessee. Mike, it's so good to see you. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Nick.
I'm really excited to dive into this conversation. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about recruiting, building bands. But before we do that, I would love for our listeners to get to know you, Mike. So can you just give us some of the high points of perhaps what brought you to where you are today? And who are those educators that influenced you along your musical journey?
Well, Nick, I started out in Tennessee high schools. I graduated in 1981 from Middleton High School. I was a all-state trumpet player for 3 years. I've played trumpet everywhere and ended up going to Memphis State, later University of Memphis. Had great influences. Dean Brunges, who was retired from the Military School of Music, built the program here at Middleton and had a fantastic program. I still say we have one of the best band rooms in Tennessee. It was designed by a band director, him. He designed it as we were going to Allstate 1 year. He made me drive, and he said, I'm gonna draw this out. And we actually talked about, hey, put this many practice rooms and do this and so forth and so on. And then, of course, Art Thiel, Mr. Thiel was like he basically was a great recruiter. I learned so much from him about watching how he would sell a program and the things he would do. And then when you look at Dr. McKay, he taught you the other side of it. Art was sort of the very businesslike, this is what's going to get done. And then Doc was sort of that building relationships and like the father figure and so forth and so on. And that combination was such an influence on me. And then, I had the pleasure of working with people like Joe Seals and had the pleasure of, going out and working at some great high schools, going over and, helping at Overton and going to West Memphis and had George over at Marion and helping him. And just the fact that I got to go around, Barry Lumpkin and the things that he did over at, over at Harding and how to manage middle schoolers and how to really get them in tune. So, there was this huge influx. But beyond music, there was an influx with even sporting. I was very privileged to be a part of a basketball team that was a state champion. I got to know who later became Hall of Fame TSSAA coaches. And I started realizing there was a commonality between being a good band director and being a good coach. And anybody that says that band directing is not like a coach, I'm going to debate them on that. And so all of those were major influences. I will say that the biggest influence that I had and still have is watching students grow. I've been doing this over 3 decades, and I'm still just as excited to teach a little sixth grader how to play hot cross buns as I was back in, 1984. And so I think that we all have to look for our passion, And that's one of the things I'm extremely blessed about. I turned 60 years old today, Nick. And it's really cool because few people can say that you got to live your complete career doing something you truly enjoy and that you're passionate about. And so that's something that we preach constantly. I preached it at the college that, you know, if you're not passionate about what you're doing, please go do something else, because passion, life without passion is boring as far as I'm concerned. So anyway.
Love it. Well, happy birthday, Mike. You look great.
Thank you.
I know our listeners can't see you, but you look great for 60, brother. I hope I can look like you when I'm 60, man.
Man, I'm going to tell you, people have asked me, said, how you feel at 60? I said, I'm just a little slower than I was at 30. That's all it. But no, 60 is a good year.
Yeah. Well, there's so many conversations I can't wait to have with you, but we got to start talking about recruiting. I mean, this is something you're so passionate about, to the extent that you wrote your dissertation.
Correct.
As a doctoral student on recruiting, and you gained the nickname Bob the Builder because you could come in and build band programs so fast. So it's not like I'm good at recruiting, I'm passionate about. Like, this is something for you that is so important. So let's start at the high level. What's your philosophy on recruiting students?
You know, one of the biggest issues that most band directors have is they rule themselves to death. You know, when I first started teaching, I would have this huge book of demerits. And, you know, we had a rule for this and a rule for that and a rule for this. And what I quickly figured out about the third year of teaching was that all the rules followed into two categories, and that is the students nor I will ever lie to each other. We'll always tell the truth, and that we will be loyal to what we're doing and the organization. And as long as you can do those two things, then you can build that relationship, that you're not the general standing on the hill, but you're the guy ready to get into the foxhole with them. And, you know, I pride myself in that students know that I keep my trumpet right next to me. I mean, I'll pick my trumpet up and start playing with them. I'm very active. You know, if they say, we can't do this marching routine, and I say, okay, watch the 87-year-old. That's what I always call myself. I said, watch me do your move. And so I'll grab their horn and I'll run across the field. And I said, now look, it wasn't pretty, but I did your move. So shut up and do your move. So anyway, so to me, it's all about relationships. And as I did this study, it was one of those aha moments. It was almost like, as I found the study and I found all the background in this, I realized that everything that I had been taught by second nature, all those great people that I mentioned earlier, I found out that a solid, productive band program in America works the same way as a solid, productive any kind of organization. Whether it's athletic, whether it's community-wise, whether it's a church, and it's basically equal thirds. The first third is, in a band program, you're going to have a third of your kids that are going to be fantastic musicians, even if we're horrible. I mean, they're going to be that kid to grab the Arban's book, and they're going to know all the characteristic studies. They're going to know Clark backwards and forwards. They're going to be in the classroom. You got to run them out of the band room. That one-third of your kids are going to be fantastic, no matter who the director is. And then you have one-third of your kids that are what I call the workhorses. They're the kids that play those second trumpet parts, those second clarinet parts. Those are the kids that, you know, they don't complain to play third bass. They just want to play. I mean, they're like, you know, let me be the best I can be. And they're not planning on being music majors. They have no intention. But the last third is the one where, to be quite frank with you, the new generation of band directors, I don't think they've ever been taught this. And that is, a third of your band are the social kids. They're the kids that, man, they just want to be a part of something cool. They want to be there with their friends. They want to just be a part of something. And there's too many band directors. And I taught college for 12 years. I said earlier, I've got 27, 28 active band directors right now that are out teaching that I trained. And every one of them have some of the largest bands in their area because they use this philosophy. I'm not going to chase the social kids away. I want that kid to play the third clarinet part. I want that kid to play that third trombone part or second trombone part. I want to be able to put that kid on crashing plates or playing in the pit, because I need those kids to fill out our sound. And then if you don't do that, you're going to suffer immediately. Because here's the question I've got to ask every director right now. Because if you can do this, we need to figure it out, because we're all going to make $1 million. If there is any way you can look at a ninth grader coming in your program and say, you know, Nick, you're going to be successful, or looking at Nick and say, Nick, you'll never be any good, then you're a lot better teacher than I am. Because there's so many kids that blossom when they're in the 11th grade. I've had kids that wait till their 12th grade year, and all of a sudden they just go out the roof. And so we got to get better at not pigeonholing kids. We got to give an opportunity for kids to be a part of the band program. And so if you don't have those three things happening, you got a major problem. And then once you have that in place, then you got to make sure everybody's on the same page. Because, frankly, you got to even set up your booster group that way. You're going to have some boosters that if the bus runs out of diesel, they'll pull it to the competition. You're going to have others that you can't get to show up for senior night, but you still need them to sign your forms. You still need to make sure that they turn in their fees. You still need them to do things. So you can't exclude them, but they still need to be a part of your group. So you got to get people on the same page. And, of course, it starts with your students, and then you got to get your parents on the same page. You got to get your administration on your page and make sure that you sell what your goal is to your administration. And then lastly, you got to sell it to the community. I firmly believe the history of bands is we are the ambassador to that school and your community. If you're not willing to be an ambassador to your school and your community, then please go do something else, because it's killing our band programs. You got to be out there in public. People got to see, hey, Doc Yop's got his kids out here. You know, they're doing this benefit. They're doing that benefit. They're marching this parade. They're doing this sporting event. And they've got to know that we're worth them supporting. And so that's a big, quick couple of minute Reader's Digest version of that. But if you forget those threes, if you forget what your band is made out of, and you try to just make it almost elitism, all of a sudden your band's going to be small. I told you earlier in our pre-talk that, you know, I remember when John Gilmer was in charge of Shelby County Schools, and he would talk about enrollment. And man, if you weren't at 10% of your student body in your program, John would come see you. He'd go, hey, what's going on? How come you're not bringing kids in? And I learned this from John, okay? And I think it came from John. John's probably still out there, but I'll tell you something. John lived this, and that is that recruiting and retention are both the same thing, that are a 24/7 activity. When you retain, you re-recruit every single day. I don't let kids quit my program with a good reason why. You don't know how many kids. I got one of my soloists right now that came to me at the beginning of the year. He got senioritis. He said, Dr. Yop, can I talk to you? I said, sure you can. And so I brought Alex in, and he said, I think I'm going to quit band. I said, well, that's fine. I leaned back in my chair. I said, so can you tell me, are you mad at me? Oh, no, I love you. Okay. Do you not like music anymore? Oh, no, I like music. And so we literally took the time to reestablish our relationship. And guess what? The kid's one of my soloists right now. I mean, he's a fantastic kid and looking to get a scholarship when he goes for his audition here in about 2 weeks. And he's going to march college. So, you know, that relationship thing, as I used to tell all of my guys training in college, if you're not willing to have a relationship, almost like a parent to kid relationship with your kids, You're never going to get them to fight for you. You're never going to get them to, on those long days in band camp, they're going to want to quit. When their chops are about to fall off on them and going through the closer, they're not going to give it, you know, everything that they got, because they don't believe in you, because they think you don't believe in them. So anyway, it's not about personality. It's not about, I know people are looking at me right now going, man, that dude's crazy. No, I'm just very passionate about what I do, and it's lasted me over 3 decades. You know, I'm an extremely blessed man that I've been able to make a living doing what I'm passionate about over 3 decades. And not many people can say that. And so we preach that all the time. We preach that you're going to be passionate about what you do. If you're planning on going to college and you want to be a doctor only because you want to make a lot of money, please don't do it. Please don't do it. If you want to go into education and you truly love kids and you want to have a impact on kids, great. Go into education. But you know, don't – even if you're digging ditches for a living, at least be passionate about digging ditches, okay? I hope that made sense.
Yeah, Mike, there's so much I love here, Mike. And I want to back up to your three equal thirds. I think this is important for us to recognize in a recruiting context, because our natural tendency, I think, is to go recruit more of those one-third kids. I want more all-staters. I want more kids that are going to die for the music, die for the band. They're going to show up, and they're just – but you're saying those kids are going to be there regardless. Let's talk about the other two groups. How does that information then change our recruiting philosophy from more of group one to more of all three groups? That's a big deal.
You know, the biggest issue, and I mentioned this earlier, is that being in a almost a we're better than you situation. And, you know, I've got this listed on my band room wall. It's all about others. It's not about me. You know, we've earned so many trophies in my career. We'd care less. We really would. I mean, trophies don't matter. What kind of ratings you get doesn't matter. You know, and I watch people, and I've watched them for years, that they get so competitive that they go, I'm not going to let this kid out. I'm not going to let this kid be a part of our program. And you've got to have this, you know, we talk about in the education world of having a school culture, having a positive school culture. Well, if you've got a positive band culture, and when the kids walk in my room, they say this is Yop World. I mean, they know, hey, they're in their own world. They know we save your drama for your mama. You bring no drama in here. We're here to make music. We're here to have fun. We're here to learn. We're here to grow. And if you have that philosophy from day one, then kids feel invited. They feel welcome. And so I do think, as you look at the research and you say, well, you know, I only want to have superior students. Well, let me give you a hint. When I took over Lake Wells High School in Central Florida, when I moved from Fayette Academy and went down there, there were 48 kids in the band. And by year three, we had 270 kids in the band program. We had the largest band in our county of 16 high schools. And we competed for the state championship at Tropicana Field. That very next year, I was hired by Weber University to be their band director, and then later Warner University. And the person that took my place went and took that 270-piece band, and in about 2 weeks, he cut them down to 60. And only took his, and if you took the numbers to it, it was about one third. It was, you know, between 60 and 70. Well, he took them to contests. They got straight superiors. You know, he had a great concert band. He had a great, I mean, he had about the same number made All-State that year that we had made the All-State earlier, but he cut out the rest of the kids. Well, they've gone through 22 band directors in 16 years. And that band has 15 kids in it right now. Now, that's the director's fault. I'm sorry. And you know what? I know this is a generation sometimes that we go, oh, let me give you a hug, but let me give you a kick in the butt. You're killing our industry. Because if you're not going to recruit, get out of the way and let somebody else recruit. Because we got to get kids back in music. You know, we're no longer STEM schools in America. According to the 2015 ESSA laws, we're supposed to be well-balanced education. That means they added the A into a STEM, and it's supposed to be STEAM. But Tennessee's about 10 years behind because Tennessee's just now starting to get it. They just came out with this article that you have 88 schools, not district, schools in the state of Tennessee. Arlington's one of them, by the way, that are now signified as a STEAM school. That means that you have administrators and community and, you know, parents and everybody else that says the arts are important. Well, I got news for you, Nick. If you were an administrator of a school and you had less than 2% or 5% of your student body in a program and you went to do some cutting, it'd be an easy cut. It would be a really easy cut. But you know what? If you've got 25 or 30% of your school that's in a program, it's difficult to cut.
Yeah, not touching that one.
You're not touching it. And so I think that we've got to get away from this, you know, almost haughtiness about, oh, well, if you want to be a musician, you come to this school. Well, you know what? I grew up in this little town, and I could play trumpet as well as anybody. Okay, and played all over the world. And bottom line, anybody's willing to practice can be a good musician, all right? But who can develop good bands? Who can develop big bands? And so there's just way too many schools that aren't hitting that 10% threshold. I do not feel like I'm doing my job until I've gone over 25%. Right now we're at 28% of our student body. That's what we are. And that's in a year and a half. Well, we got there because we used the rule of building relationships and not throwing away those kids that could develop. You know, I'm going to get biblical with you a second. The Bible says that our job is just throw out seeds. He's going to give the increase. Well, guess what? My job as a recruiter and building a program is I'm going to throw out as many seeds as I can as far as those musical seeds and say, okay, Who wants to take part of it? And it's something that I think we've sort of lost that skill of building groups. I mean, a lot of athletic groups aren't being built anymore the same way. And so I did the research on it. The research is there that if you forget about your second and third players in your band and you think you can build nothing but just the pros, your band's going to be so small. I mean, you might as well be the mighty combo because they're going to be super, super small.
Yeah. But how does that influence your expectations, right? Because what you're saying is we have to cast a wider net, right? We have to get not just the best students musically, but all of the students and give them the opportunity to flourish. But that means we can't hold our expectations to the group as we would if we were just the top third.
Totally disagree.
Okay,
totally
let's hear
disagree.
It. Let's
okay.
hear it.
So, you know, the old technique, if you go back to the old Bill Moffitt arrangements, okay, Bill Moffitt was a master of this. You know, he was director of bands Purdue. He was at Purdue for years. And his arrangements, if you go back and you analyze them, you look at the first parts, and man, they're booger bears, all right? But go look at the third parts. You got kids that all they had to play was a whole note. Well, my question is, if you're playing and you're trying to support those top players, and let's just say you've got 48 wins, and of those 48 wins, you've got 12 of them that are blowing and going. You know they could play Arben's characteristic number 4, 5, 6, and 7 by memory. You know they could do it and play anything in the Rose Book. All right. So you give them all the meat, But you make sure that your music is arranged in such a way that you don't forget that you need to have good tonal quality and good support for the other moving parts on top. And so that's what Bill Moffitt did in every arrangement. And so when you look at some of the Poulin arrangements and some of the ones that are coming out and doing these competitive bands, if you really analyze them, okay, you'll see that they do a lot of that. I got to know Robert W. Smith when I was down in college at Weber University, and one of the big cores would come and spend their time at our university, and I got to talk, and he would arrange their music, and we got to talking about this, and he said, "Yeah, that was the old style, and we've forgotten that." And then I've noticed that as he would produce some of his bigger ensemble music, he does the same thing. He's gonna have a chance for those kids to play, and so it should not lose the quality, because if you're teaching good sound, if you're teaching good attacks and good releases, and you're teaching bell to bell every day, and you're working with your kids, your third players are just as important as that kid that can scream a high G. Because the high G sounds like a banjo out screaming in the woods if he's got no support. And so, you know, I totally disagree that you cannot make that bottom third sound good. Now, they may be like drones on a bagpipe, but you can make them sound good.
That's Dr. Mike Yacht, Director of Bands at Middleton High School in Middleton, Tennessee, talking with Nick Averwater. This conversation will continue on the next episode of the After Hours Director Spotlight, which is presented by Amro Music. This podcast is produced by Nick Averwater and Joel Hurd in Memphis, Tennessee. And you can hear many more conversations at amromusic.com/afterhours.
Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, here are two easy and fast ways you can support the After Hours show. First, your 5-star review means a lot, as it helps to boost us in the podcast rankings so that other music educators just like you can find us. Second, if you thought of someone that would enjoy this week's content and episode, hey, please share it with them so that they too can be a part of the After Hours community. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.